From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Robert Jackson Jr. is one of five current commissioners on the Securities and Exchange Commission. The SEC is one of the main regulatory agencies of America's public corporations. Its duty, quote, to protect investors, maintain fair, orderly, and efficient markets, and facilitate capital formation. Well, Jackson joins us today to talk about a long-standing corporate practice that may be great for investors, but not great for building the economy overall. Remember that trillion-dollar tax cut of 2017? Well, the Trump administration said corporations would use the money to invest in America, and it turns out they invested in themselves with a dizzying round of stock buybacks. The SEC commissioner says it's time to change that practice. So this hour on Point, corporate tax cuts, stock buybacks, and investing in America. And you can join us. Do you think corporate buybacks should change? Or is that unfairly telling American business what it can and can't do in the best interest of its investors? Join us anytime on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, Robert Jackson Jr. joins us today from Washington. As I mentioned, he is a commissioner currently serving on the Securities and Exchange Commission. He joined the SEC in 2018 after being nominated by President Donald Trump. Commissioner Jackson, welcome to On Point.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
I first wanted to start with something of a case study, just to sort of help listeners wrap their heads around what we're talking about.
Sure.
And this comes directly from some terrific reporting over the weekend in the New York Times about FedEx, okay? Because FedEx was as a company, was a big champion of the 2017 tax cuts, particularly the corporate tax cut that was passed in that GOP bill here. And I want to play a little bit from 2017 when FedEx chairman and CEO Frederick Smith spoke with Larry Kudlow on his show, Smith was really championing what he saw as the upside of corporate tax cuts.
So if you make the United States a better place to invest with the worldwide mobility of capital, there is no question in my mind that we would see a renaissance of capital investment, a growth in GDP, and an increase in income for our blue-collar workforce in the United States.
That's FedEx Chairman Frederick Smith in 2017. Now, Commissioner Jackson, according to the New York Times reporting this weekend, FedEx so far, as a result of that 2017 tax cut, has saved $1.6 billion. Its financial filings show it owed nothing in taxes for 2018. And as for capital investments, the company spent less in the 2018 fiscal year than it had projected in 2017. And here's the kicker. Much of the savings FedEx incurred by not having to pay taxes have gone directly to shareholders. More than $2 billion in stock buybacks and dividend increases for the 2019 fiscal year. Is this what you're talking about when you're concerned about stock buybacks?
Well, first of all, thanks again for the opportunity to be here with you. What you've described is very consistent with something we've seen in our economy before. And here's the thing I want to make sure listeners understand. We have been to the movie of tax cuts and buybacks before. Mm-hmm. In the Republican administration during the George W. Bush era, we enacted a quite substantial tax cut during that period. And studies after that showed very clearly that most corporations use the funds from that tax cut for buybacks. And here's the kicker. That particular tax cut actually required that companies deploy the capital for capital expenditures, wage increases, and investments in their people. Yet studies showed that, in fact, the companies use them for buybacks. So we've been to this movie before. Mm-hmm. And what you're describing to me, that corporations turned around and took the Trump tax cut and didn't use it in investing in their people or in infrastructure, but instead for other purposes, shouldn't surprise anybody at all.
So about that 2004 tax cut, I mean, if we've been to this movie before, as you said, why is it that we had people like, you know, the FedEx chairman, like Frederick Smith, like many members of Congress, saying that slashing the corporate tax rate by 14% or 15% was going to produce this quote unquote renaissance in capital investment? Why even say that when we know that that's patently untrue based on very recent history?
It wouldn't be the first time that a CEO predicted a renaissance for the American worker that came up quite short of those expectations. But at the SEC, the thing that I've been most focused on is not only the tax policy implications here, but in particular the incentive effects. Because one of the really troubling problems here is that putting to one side the tax cut and why companies pursue buybacks, it's how they're doing it that's so important. You see, what is happening in many buybacks is executives themselves are selling their personal shares of stock into the buyback right after the buyback is announced, taking advantage of a spike in stock prices. And in research that I've released at the SEC over the last few months, we've shown that those kinds of buybacks tend to be the ones that don't even add long-term value for investors. So it's very troubling that companies aren't using the tax cuts in order to help American workers. But what's even more troubling is the degree to which they might be using it to let CEOs cash out.
So there's a lot that you said there, and I want to actually sort of tease it apart over the course of the whole hour here. But first of all, just, you know, sort of buybacks 101 here. What is the on-paper reasoning for a corporate buyback of stock? Essentially, it drives up share prices, right? Because it ends up being fewer – the number of stock goes down when a corporation buys it back. Is that right?
That's right. The basic law and finance of a buyback works like this. The company has excess capital and has to determine what to do with it. And it will often choose, depending on the projects that are available to it, to return some of that capital to investors by announcing that the company will buy back shares. And typically the signal that's being sent there is that the company believes that the stock is undervalued and that as a consequence, they're prepared to use treasury money at the corporation to buy those shares back.
Okay. And so if they were to do that and it's tied to – or share price is – or performance in share price is tied to a CEO's compensation, are you're saying that there's perhaps a perverse incentive there?
Absolutely. So two things to – and I think you're right. We should unpack these two things. One is the CEO has to decide whether and when to do a buyback. And second, the CEO is paid based on the stock price and indeed paid in shares of stock. And what the CEO would like to do is find a moment in which to sell those shares. And what's really troubling for me is that at the same moment the company says the stock is so cheap, we're going to use treasury money to buy it. That's the same moment the CEO says, this is a time for me to sell it. And my experience with CEOs is that they don't sell expensive things cheaply. And that's why I'm so troubled by the notion that at the same time they're buying back stock, they're selling their own personal shares.
Yeah. So we will talk a little bit later about what the SEC might be able to do about this problem. But I still just want to take a little time here to dwell in the space of 2017, because your point about we have been here before, I think, is very, very important. So fool me once, like, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on us, right? So I just want to play a little bit of tape here. This is from November of 2017, where it was an event hosted by The Wall Street Journal. And you're about to hear Wall Street Journal Associate Editor John Busey asking a group of about 30 CEOs at the journal's annual CEO Council gathering if they would use tax cuts to make investments in their businesses.
Can I ask you all a quick question? If the tax reform bill goes through, do you plan to increase investment, your company's investment, capital investment? Just a show of hands, the tax reform goes through? Okay.
Why aren't the other hands up?
So that last voice you heard was Gary Cohn, then the director of the National Economics Council, because basically only four of the 30 hands of the CEOs went up saying that they would make investments. So they were telling Washington leadership completely, honestly, even before the tax cut went through, that they weren't going to use this money to invest back in America. And Mr. Jackson, if I can, because there's just so much information here that we had before the tax cut went through. In the summer of 2017, Bank of America did a survey of 300 executives saying what they would do, asking what they would do if they got a windfall from a tax cut. Their number one response was pay down debt. Number two was stock buybacks. Number three was mergers. Actual investment in business was basically at the bottom of the list. So how did we let this happen?
Well, fundamentally, I think no one should be surprised by any of the things you just said. And here's why. In my experience, and you know, before I was an SEC commissioner, I was a corporate lawyer. And before then, I was an investment banker. My experience is that people do what they're paid to do. People follow their incentives. And the truth is that CEOs don't get paid for making investments in people. CEOs don't get paid for building long-term capital investments in American communities. CEOs get paid on the basis of stock price. And so it's not surprising to me at all, as someone who studies incentives, that what they did with the money we gave them was maximize that stock price. Now, we can talk as a society about whether or not that's the right thing for them to maximize, and we should. But we ought to be honest with ourselves about what's going to happen when we cut taxes for American corporations, because we've been to this movie before.
So is it the role of the SEC then here to deal directly with practices around stock buybacks? I mean, there are a lot of people out there who would say no, you really shouldn't. You can regulate, you can be sure that businesses are following the law, but you shouldn't tell a CEO what to do regarding when, where, and how to do a buyback.
So just to be clear, nobody, so far as I know, nobody is proposing or has proposed that I at the SEC or we from Washington dictate what a CEO does with money from a buyback. What we have said we should do is look at the incentives CEOs have, which have always been the ambit of the SEC. And I have to tell you, it's a puzzling argument that the Securities and Exchange Commission and someone like me, sworn to protect ordinary investors, shouldn't be interested in and shouldn't study and shouldn't think about the degree to which CEOs have incentives to line their own pockets instead of protect American investors.
Well, we are talking this hour with SEC Commissioner Robert Jackson Jr., and we're talking about the practice of corporate buyback of stock, especially with the windfall corporate America got from that $2017 trillion tax cut. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Robert Jackson Jr. He is a currently serving commissioner at the Securities and Exchange Commission. And he was appointed to the SEC in 2017 by President Donald Trump, one of five commissioners last 5 years. And he's here this hour to talk with us about the practice of corporate stock buybacks and the impact that has, or whether it's good for the U.S. economy. Commissioner Jackson, let's just get some more of the sort of basics out here, because I think for folks who aren't well-versed in corporate finance, some of this can be rather complicated here. Do you recall, I mean, how unusual was the amount of corporate buyback we saw in the first quarter of 2018 after the tax cut was passed versus other times where corporations have had a windfall from tax policy?
Well, Meghna, what's really striking is it's unprecedented. It's really record-setting levels of buybacks after the tax cuts. And again, to the degree – and we were having this conversation just before the break – to the degree that we want to have a conversation as a country about whether that's the right thing for our communities and workers, we should. But we shouldn't fool ourselves into thinking that American corporations, handed the gift of a quite substantial tax cut, are going to use it to raise wages or build communities. That's not what they're paid to do, and so it's not what they did.
Well, that's exactly what they were told, but what the American people were told, though, by the politicians who were trying to pass the tax cut. I can't escape that over and over again, and I know you're not here to answer for them, but it is the gap between the economic and fiscal realities versus the political propaganda, I would say, that was used to pass this tax cut here. But I'm seeing a speech that you gave not that long ago saying that in the first quarter of 2018 alone, American corporations bought back a record $178 billion in stock in one quarter. But again, given what the SEC's mission is to protect investors, aren't CEOs then acting in investors' best interest by engaging in a practice that drives up share price?
Oh, Magna, I'm so glad you put it just that way, because the answer to that is no. Here's why. My office released some research just a few months ago showing that overwhelmingly, when companies announce a buyback and CEOs sell into it, the long-run performance for investors is poor. Now, when companies announce a buyback and the CEO doesn't cash out, the CEO is sending a signal to the market that this is the right long-run decision for the company. Those companies tend to do well. Those stocks do better, Magna. But allowing executives to line their pockets and sell into the buyback not only isn't good for American communities and workers, it's not even good for the investors who these CEOs are sworn to protect. So I think at a minimum, what we need to be doing at the SEC is taking a close look at those incentives and not put our heads in the sand about the very real human incentive CEOs have to maximize their own welfare, even at the expense of those of investors.
So what are the SEC's current rules around stock buybacks?
So the SEC has a rule known as 10b-18, which provides, under certain circumstances, a safe harbor from a particular type of market manipulation liability for firms that follow certain rules when it comes to buybacks. We haven't touched that safe harbor for more than 15 years. And one of the things I called for in the speech that you just pointed to is for us to take another look at a long outdated rule that says and does nothing about the incentives I've just described. And it's a funny thing because my colleagues on the commission tend to be interested in retrospective review of outdated rules, and particularly ones that affect multi-billions of dollars in our markets. But this is one they've not wanted to touch. And it remains puzzling to me that we've done nothing at all to address the incentive problems that CEOs face.
They haven't wanted – so you're talking about your other four fellow commissioners?
That's right. I mean, so the speech that you pointed to, I gave well over a year ago. Senator Van Hollen of Maryland reached out and asked me for additional data, which I provided back in the spring. And my continued push to my colleagues has been, this is a long outdated rule. Let's take a look at what the market can tell us now about what we might need to do to protect investors. And let me give you an example. We may very well need to hold a broader open comment period about the volume of buybacks, about how they are executed in the marketplace, and especially about how CEOs cash out after they announce a buyback and how that affects the whether or not that buyback is good for investors. But instead, my colleagues have left this outdated rule in place. And again, I think looking back at our rules to see how they work generally makes sense. My colleagues usually agree with me, but not on this one.
Have they told you why?
Well, I will say that one of the great benefits of being on an independent commission like mine is I do get the opportunity to be heard. My strong sense is that my colleagues' main concern is not wanting to make capital allocation decisions for corporate insiders. And look, I fully understand that the Securities Exchange Commission should not be mandating capital allocation decisions. No one has ever proposed such a thing. No. What we're asking about is CEO accountability for what they do with the capital that investors and, in the case of the Trump tax cuts, the government have handed over to CEO control. So I must tell you, the idea that anybody wants to control capital allocation decisions is not a serious argument that anybody's making. Instead, it's being used as a way not to pay attention to the incentive problems executives face. And that's the problem I think we ought to be studying.
Now, you have spent much of your career prior to being on the SEC in academia, right, as a law professor at NYU and Columbia, a little bit of time in the private sector. Is that right?
That's right.
And Bear Stearns in 2009?
Not my fault.
No. I'm not hanging the financial crisis on you, Commissioner Jackson.
But
I raised the point about your background here because, okay, look, I'm in the position of asking questions that are in the minds of Americans here. Could part of the resistance that you are feeling from your fellow commissioners about addressing these old rules on buybacks be because many people see essentially a revolving door between regulatory agencies like the SEC and the very corporate boards or executives and C-suites in corporate America? And so therefore, commissioners now may be in the position of benefiting from stock buybacks of the future. So they do not have encouragement or incentive to change the rules.
Right. It's a very fair question, and you should be asking it of me and everybody else who comes to Washington in these jobs. I can tell you, from my personal point of view, because I'm a teacher and going back to teaching someday, I personally won't be benefiting from any buybacks. And I must tell you, I understand the question. I don't think any of my colleagues is thinking about this problem that way. I really think that what they're thinking about is the degree to which the SEC should or should not be involved in capital allocation decisions. Now, the good news is I really do feel like I'm being heard, and that when I go to them and say, guys, look, I understand you want to let the market allocate capital. I'm not even prepared to disagree with that in this room. But what I am prepared to urge you is that we should not let corporate managers line their pockets the day that they announce a buyback without having to disclose that fact to the American public. And I think that has moved the ball forward. Now, whether or not I'll get there and persuade them to take another look at our safe harbor, who knows? But it won't be for lack of trying, I assure you of that.
Well, let's take a couple calls here. Let's go to Chris, who's calling from Barrie, Vermont. Chris, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the call. This is not a question. It's just a comment and a thank you for the work you're doing. I, like probably many people, have a lot of my retirement, if not most of my retirement, in investments and in the markets. And it's just nice to hear that somebody's trying to look out for them. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Chris, thank you for your call. Let's turn now to Mike, who's calling from Manchester, Maryland. Mike, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. Commissioner Jackson, I'd like to thank you for your work. It's really refreshing to hear that. I think the issue over capital allocation is very important. I don't think the government should be dictating how capital is allocated, because capital does not stop at a buyback. It continues to be invested in the economy. I think the issue that you're addressing is an important one, how CEOs game the system to line their pockets. But the point I want to make is this. Very simply, I think if America wants to see investments in buildings, equipment, and jobs, they have to do two things. One, we need reciprocal trade laws with some of our largest partners, such as China, which doesn't have the same environmental and safety laws and incentives. They manipulate their currency. And number two, when the government says we're going to have a $1.6 trillion give back to corporate America, there's nothing wrong with that. We should attach strings to it and say you're required, if you get this, if you receive these funds, you must invest in jobs and people and machinery and equipment to make the products here, because the service industries follow the products.
And Mike, can I just jump in here for a second? Hang on here, Mike. But Commissioner Jackson told us a little earlier in the program that there was such or a similar requirement in 2004, and corporate America didn't follow through on those requirements.
Well, we have to have teeth. There has to be teeth to back those decisions, not to take the capital that the U.S. government gives them, because the government has the option of taking those funds and allocating them through municipalities and grants and other measures that the government takes. We need to have teeth behind it. Mm. It's just like if you drive through a red light, you should be fined, and your behavior will change. But the issue that I think Commissioner Jackson is rightfully addressing is CEOs, American CEOs, are raping this country, and they're investing their capital overseas. I give you an example, General Motors. What did they do with the TARP money? $32 billion of TARP money. Where did it go? They built four brand new assembly plants in China. They're building more products in China than they are in America. Is that an investment in the American economy?
Well,
and
Mike,
we gave them that money with no strings attached?
Mike, thank you so much for your call. Commissioner Jackson, a lot there, but go ahead.
Thanks so much. Let me just start by saying how much I appreciate something both Chris and Mike said, which is about the public servants at the SEC. I'll be honest. One of the things that I've been most privileged to do is work with the 4,000 incredible people who come to work at the SEC every day to protect American investors. And I fully agree with Chris and Mike that if we are going to do what we did in 2017, which is to say to American corporations, we're going to rationalize this tax system and make it work in a way that maybe makes a little more sense from a business point of view. What we want in exchange is for you to make investments here in this country in capital expenditures, in wages, and in the development of the human capital of the people of the United States. And I think Mike's answer to you, Meghna, was absolutely right. We got that wrong in 2004, and it sounds to me like what Mike is saying, hey, then write it better. Give it some teeth. And I couldn't agree with him more. I think a lot of people feel that way, and I think Mike is spot on.
Well, on that point, let's listen to an interview or a clip from an interview between J.P. Morgan chief global strategist David Kelly. He spoke to CNN's Julia Chatterley back in February and sort of complained that companies should not be required to reinvest their tax windfall into jobs and investments. So here's that exchange between Julia Chatterley and, again, J.P. Morgan's chief global strategist, David Kelly.
What about paying their workers more money? What about putting some more of that money to good health care, for example? Why is that not a good idea?
It's not a good idea to just single out publicly traded corporations for these ideas. If politicians want a $15 minimum wage around the country, pass a law. Make it apply to everybody. If you want health care for everybody, pass a public option. Make it available to everybody. But don't just, instead of doing those tough things, say, well, we're going to beat up on the big, bad, publicly traded corporations. Make them do this, while privately held corporations or small businesses don't have to. That's just an inefficient way, and it's sort of chickening out on the policy debate that we really need to have in this country about these benefits and about inequality.
That's J.P. Morgan's chief global strategist David Kelly on CNN in February. Commissioner Jackson, what do you think, that maybe the SEC isn't the right place for some of this action, but rather the halls of Congress?
So two things about that. First of all, to the degree that we need to have a broader policy conversation in this country about wages, tax policy, et cetera, I fully agree that the right place for that is often in the halls of Congress. And but I must tell you, I find really, really puzzling this notion that we in the SEC ought to look the other way at hard questions. That's just not the way we've ever run the Securities and Exchange Commission in this country. Let me give you an example. In the early 1990s, there was no hotter issue, no more challenging question than whether CEO compensation should be disclosed. There were a lot of politics around that. Their law was passed, all kinds of debates. The fact is the SEC stepped in and required disclosure of executive pay over objections just like that one. You see, the objection was, this isn't your lane. Uh-huh. This is a concern about social policy. No, no. It was a concern about the conflict between CEOs and their investors. That is squarely our job. And just like it was our job in the 90s to address that issue, it is our job today to address CEO incentives when it comes to buybacks.
But, I mean, the SEC doesn't always put on the superhero cape here. Like, I am seeing, looking at the speech that you gave earlier that we talked about here, and this is a quote from your speech. You said, Congress realized that the importance of keeping executive skin in the game. So the Dodd-Frank Act included several provisions designed to give investors more information about whether and how managers cash out. And then you go on to remind us that those rules have not yet been completed, keeping investors in the dark. And you say nearly 8 years since that landmark legislation, it is completely unacceptable that the SEC has not promulgated these and other rules as required by law. So what's the holdup?
I think that's absolutely right. And frankly, I think it's an astonishing and very troubling thing that duly enacted laws of the United States Congress in 2010 to require clawbacks when executives are paid in a way that it doesn't reflect the actual underlying earnings, to link pay to performance, to keep banker bonuses from leading to another financial crash. All of these rules were enacted by Congress in 2010 and have been sitting on our desk at the SEC since that time. I think it's a huge problem for the SEC's credibility that we haven't acted on those. And let me say one more thing about it. For those who would tell us, take this debate to Congress, we did. We did and passed a duly enacted law. I don't think you can make the argument you should take your concerns to the Congress of the United States and then be a regulator who ignores the mandates of the Congress of the United States.
Mm. But Commissioner Jackson, if I may, though, why has the SEC not acted on the laws passed by Congress that mandate these very formation of these very rules you're talking about? Why has that not happened?
Well, so I think straightforwardly, there's been historically a disagreement among the commissioners as to what exactly those rules should look like. And I think, unfortunately, I mean, look, just to be clear, my current chairman, Jay Clayton, took office two and a half years ago. He inherited these rules that were not yet enacted in the previous administration. I think the straightforward reason for it, it's such an interesting – we have enacted dozens, hundreds of rules under Dodd-Frank, but we haven't yet gotten to the ones that rein in CEO pay. And if you think that's a coincidence, you haven't been in Washington very long.
Well, we are talking this hour with SEC Commissioner Robert Jackson Jr. We're talking about the practice of corporate stock buybacks and CEO cash outs as well. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Robert Jackson Jr. He is a currently serving commissioner on the Securities and Exchange Commission, and he's joining us this hour to talk about the practice of corporate stock buybacks, especially in the wake of the $2017 trillion tax cut that was passed in the United States, and about CEO behavior around those stock buybacks. Commissioner Jackson, I want to dig in a little bit more, because I know this is really one of the parts that you care about deeply. About CEO cash outs, okay? Because you have pointed out in the past that prior to the financial crisis, that top executives at Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers, I'm looking at your speech here, these are your numbers, personally cashed out on $2.4 billion in stock before those firms collapsed. And then you went on and asked your staff more recently to take a look at about how stock buybacks affect how much skin that in executives decide to keep in the game. What did you find?
Meghna, when we released this study last year, what we showed is that overwhelmingly CEOs use the announcement of a buyback to cash out their personal shares of company stock. They sell many more times the number of shares after a buyback as they do at any other period throughout the year. And what's really striking about that is I think an ordinary investor would find it confusing that the company chooses this moment to buy the shares back, suggesting they're cheap, while the CEO is choosing this moment to sell his personal shares, suggesting that he thinks the value might be too high.
And so, but explain that. So, is there a misleading of investors going on here?
Well, I think there's a classic conflict of interest. On the day the buyback is announced, the company is sending a signal to the market: our stock is too cheap. We don't believe that this price fully reflects the value of the firm, and so we're going to use the company's money to buy it back. And the notion that on the very same day, the executive of that firm would choose to sell her shares strikes me as a basic conflict of interest that ought to be disclosed. And here's the thing, Meghna, to know. Our rules currently do not require the executive or the company to disclose their plans to sell on the day they announce the buyback. Instead, they can just announce the buyback, watch the stock pop, and 2 or 3 days later, disclose the fact that they've sold into the transaction. And I think that it's time for that to change.
And this is not insider trading.
Well, yes, we should be very clear. And I was careful in my speech, and I want to be careful here to say I'm not looking at any particular company or any particular executive, and I'm certainly not suggesting anybody is engaged in any thing improper. No, that's the whole point, Meghna. It is perfectly legal for folks to do this. And why we would want to be for a system that allows a company to announce a buyback on Monday, get a huge stock pop, and let the executive cash out on Tuesday without telling anybody in the market, I just don't know why we'd be for that.
Right. So you said in your speech that this is another piece of troubling evidence, in your words, that executives spend a lot of time on short-term decision-making versus that all-important long-term value creation. I mean, look, the truth is it's harder to actually build your company than it is to make an announcement and watch the stock pop. I mean, that's a fact, isn't it?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And when we let executives cash out in the short term, we give them every reason to focus on short-term financial engineering and not long-term building of communities and product development and the kind of research and development that will keep America a leader in the global economy. I think, honestly, Meghna, I totally understand those out there who are frustrated to hear that CEOs doing this. But I got to tell you, people follow their incentives. They do what we allow them to do. These CEOs are men, unfortunately, mostly men, not angels. If we allow them to do this, we should not be surprised when they take tax cuts and use them for buybacks instead of the long-term value creation that we need as a nation.
Okay, so then within the regulatory capacity of the SEC, let's get down to sort of concrete potential solutions here.
Sure.
What can the SEC do to, prevent or make sure that corporate boards are not using compensation structures that end up, you know, driving these CEO decisions around buybacks?
Well, there's so much we can and should do. First of all, we should have an open comment period about Rule 10b-18, which gives a safe harbor to buybacks.
Right.
And we should ask, we haven't looked at that rule for 15 years. Is this the right balance of requirements to get a safe harbor? Should there be an additional requirement for the safe harbor that the CEO not sell into the transaction, for example, so that we give CEOs incentives to keep skin in the game rather than cash out? That's one set of solutions.
So wait, just to be clear there, are you saying that when you say additional safe harbor, I'm just trying to get this into like the parlance of lay people here. Are you
sure.
saying that the SEC could tell boards that, or they could prohibit boards from allowing executives to sell their shares after a buyback?
Well, we could do a number of things, and we would want to have an open comment period. But just to be very concrete, what we could say is if you want a safe harbor, if you want to be sure, or if you want a presumption that you're not going to be held liable for liability around these transactions, you need to either A, not have your executive sell into the buyback, or B, at a minimum, provide an affirmative disclosure to investors on the day of the buyback about what your executives plan to do in connection with this transaction.
With their own shares.
That's exactly right. I would think that'd be the bare minimum that the SEC could and would do in this area.
Okay. Well, let's go to Joe, who's calling from Beverly, Massachusetts. Joe, you're on the air.
Hello. Commissioner, I appreciate the conversation. I'd like to make a couple of comments based on my experience as CEO of Progress Software, PRGS.
Thanks, Joe.
I think that both stock options and buybacks have gotten a really bad rap. And I'd simply like to say that if done properly, and in our case, our options vested over a long period of time, mm-hmm. and we only did buybacks when we thought the stock was really, really cheap, and I had thought there was an SEC rule against the buybacks accruing, being company officers, executive officers being allowed to participate in buybacks. But quite aside from that, because we bought the stock back when we thought it was cheap, no one participated in the buyback. So mm-hmm. it seems to me a very simple way to solve the problem is simply to exclude executive officers from participating in buybacks.
Mm-hmm. So, Joe, first of all, those are all really important points. And you're raising an important thing I want to be sure I'm clear about. Lots of companies that are well-governed and thoughtful about this do this right. Lots of companies, like sounds like, Joe, the one that you ran, are really thoughtful and just say, look, it's not appropriate for our executives to participate in this. Or why do we want to let the buyback be a moment of cashing out for our executives? But I got to tell you, man, just so you know, I spend my time every day not thinking about companies that are well-run, but thinking about what can I do to protect investors in cases where the governance isn't ideal, where the board is conflicted, where maybe the CEO doesn't come to this conclusion. And that's a little bit around what we've been talking about this morning. There are lots of companies out there who do this right and well, and it's a really important point you're raising.
Joe, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Naj, who's calling from Lake Placid, New York. Naj, you're on the air.
Thank you. First off, Commissioner and everybody else, this is a fantastic discussion, very important, so I'm very glad you're doing it. And I'm mindful back when these big family firms like DuPont first hired people to be their executives, they were trying to motivate them to act like them for the long-term interests of the corporations. Mm-hmm. And of course, I think that's gotten a lot of perverted lately with this short-term approach. And I'm wondering if the SEC should put in some regulations whereby, in a sense, all employees get stock, so not just a few, so that, you know, let's get all the employees become stockholders of the corporation. And then when you start doing this type of governance, more people, the whole, everybody's involved will benefit, not just a few.
Well, it's a great question, and thank you for those kind words. For me, one of the fundamental challenges across American companies is the degree to which stock and other kinds of motivators are really reserved for the top of the house in a way that, by the way, wasn't always true over the long-run history of those companies. I think a lot of employees across these companies would be very happy to be invested in the long-term future of the firm. Now, I will say that a lot of the newest companies to come to market are working very hard on this. A lot of tech startups, for example, are doing what they can to make their employees or those that use their services part of the long-term future of the company. I would just add one note here, which is whether it's for executives or employees, it's really important that that stock ownership be for the long term. Mm. It's really, really tempting when you give shares or options out to folks to get them to maximize their value over the short run and cash them out. And for the same reason that that would worry me about the incentives of executives, I'd want to be sure employees were really invested in the long run future of the firm. I think that's what most ordinary American workers and investors want. And I think that's what companies should be providing.
So, Commissioner Jackson, I mean, I'm curious about something. Ostensibly, a board's role is to protect the long-term interests of the corporation, right? So what would you think of – I mean, we've had ideas from Senator Elizabeth Warren, for example, that one potential solution is changing the structure of the board itself and set aside a certain percentage of seats for representatives of employees, because they would have much bigger incentive to be sure that we had long-term decision-making versus just the, you know, the folks at the C-suite. What do you think about changing the board structure itself?
Well, Senator Warren's been leading on so many of these issues, and I'm open to any idea that would give board members more incentives to look out for the long-run future of the company and the country. Here's one thing I'd say about that. You know, we are expecting so much of corporate boards these days. We're asking them to do a level of work that's really quite unprecedented. And as someone who used to be in those rooms and watched directors grappling to do the right thing, even a well-intentioned, very good director has limited resources at her disposal to really push back when corporate management is considering doing something else. So I would go in a way even further and give those board members, full-time staff, resources, the ability to actually push back on CEOs who are pursuing short-term value over the interests of the company and the country. I think we got to empower folks on these corporate boards if we're going to ask them to rise to the occasion of addressing some of these challenges.
And so how would we do that? I mean, is that something that the corporation in and of itself would have to decide is a priority? Or again, are there regulatory structures that could bring that along?
Well, there's a number of proposals that have been out there for a while on creating a more engaged full-time corporate boardroom. One could be corporate governance standards that could come either from the stock exchanges or from the Congress. Another could be a push by shareholders. And many shareholders have been bringing proposals to companies to say, do a better job in preparing your board to push back on short-term managerial decisions. So there are a lot of ways we could move that forward. What I would like to do is make sure that if we're going to ask this of America's corporate boards, we give them the tools to push back on management when management wants to do the short run thing rather than the long run value creation that we're asking of them.
Okay. Commissioner Jackson, I have to say I really appreciate you you taking the time to speak with us, because it's not that often that a sitting SEC commissioner, you know, speaks so publicly and openly about these issues. But respectfully, given, you know, the SEC's track record, say, prior to the 2008 financial crisis, I imagine there are a lot of people out there listening saying, why should we believe anything that you say to begin with? That the SEC for a long time has had the regulatory tools in hand to pare back on unacceptable corporate behavior and hasn't chosen to use them. So what, you know, what difference does it make now?
So that is a very fair question, and I have no doubt that you've got many, many listeners who are wondering about it, Meghna, so I'm glad that you asked. And let me say this. The SEC, first of all, in my humble experience and view, is full of thousands of hardworking public servants who are very much trying to put these tools to work. But the truth is, if we want to change practices in corporate America, this is how we do it. Through conversations like this one, where folks can call in and ask someone in their government, hey, why haven't you done something about this? Why aren't you focused on that? And candidly, part of my job is to hear those questions. And I've been very fortunate not only to be here with you today, but also to go around the country and talk to individual investors about what's on their mind. And I got to tell you, the question you just asked me has been asked of me hundreds of times. And we ought to keep asking it, because that's the way we'll get the SEC, the companies, and the economy that the American people deserve.
Let's see if we can sneak in one more call here. Hernan is calling from Tampa, Florida. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm a project manager here in Florida. I see kind of a stagnation in projects on the public and also the private sector. And there may be something to do with this situation. I have a question about why is it considered insider trading when the executives make the decisions and there are predictable outcomes.
Right. And Hernan, I'm going to take it back from you there because we did touch on this a couple of minutes ago, but I will ask the commissioner to clarify a little about why it's not considered insider trading when a CEO cashes out after or right at the same time as a buyback.
So thanks so much for the question. I think insider trading is – this is a broader, separate subject. I could come back and we could have this conversation. But the law of insider trading has developed over the years in a way that doesn't always fit the circumstances that somebody might think would lead to an insider trading case. I've actually in a New York Times op-ed just last year with Preet Bharara called on the Congress and others to reform our insider trading laws to close some of these gaps. And I actually think that we really do need to work on modernizing the law of insider trading. But for present purposes in the buyback space, none of the research I'm doing suggests, and I don't want to suggest that any of it is insider trading. I do want to suggest that announcing a buyback and having executives cash out at the same time sends a confusing signal to the market and the American investor.
We've got about 30 seconds left, Commissioner Jackson, and I hear you about having these public conversations about SEC rules. But do you think that that's enough to overwhelm or overcome the effect of corporate lobbying in Washington? Because to circle back to FedEx, they spent $10 million on lobbying in 2017 in advance of that tax cut.
So,
and that was just one company.
Absolutely. Look, I'm not going to pretend like lobbying is not a powerful force in Washington. A more powerful force are honest conversations about what we can expect from our companies and our top executives. And that's why I'm here today and so grateful for the chance to talk with you.
Well, Robert Jackson Jr. is a currently serving commissioner at the Securities and Exchange Commission. We'll put up links to his speeches about corporate buybacks that we've referred to at this during this hour at onpointradio.org. Commissioner Jackson, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.